Radio Kevale, your animal kiss radio.
Welcome to Radio.
Welcome to Radio Cavalli.
Radio Cavalli, yay! Woo. We're back for another show, January.
This is Santeria,
again. And this is Mitchell. So fresh, 2012.
Yeah,
we're off to a good start.
We are.
Prison demo.
Yeah, that was a great start to the new year. It's a good example of prison solidarity in action. That was fantastic.
But what I liked on the indie media about that was two things. One, that the byline was same shit, different year.
Yep.
Nice one. And there was a nice link up in anti-prison solidarity around the world. Australia getting a mention again, which is hot news for this month for Australia, which is nice to hear. Where they had a good action at a detention centre in Sydney called Villawood, which has been like going on for decades, but is a good sort of activist hotspot for New Year's and anti-deportation sort of stuff.
Great.
So it was cool reading about lots of solidarity over the New Year and stuff with anti-prison stuff. So.
I think around Europe in the UK and also in another colony in Canada, another former colony, they also did prison solidarity demos and things all around. So it was pretty cool to see that it's the new year chic to do thing to be doing as well for anarchists.
Yes, that's what you should be doing on New Year's.
Yeah, definitely. Great. So we have a jam-packed show as always. So we're going to be talking about today. We're going to have an interview with someone from Bristol Rising Tide about the anti-fracking blockade that happened December 1st, so a little bit of time ago, but it should be really interesting.
I've done an interview with some folks who are organising the Radical Film Fest, which is happening now, which opened last night at the Stag and Hound. So I'm chatting to some people who are involved with getting some of the films and why Bristol needs a Radical Film Festival and what is radical about the film festival even. What else we got?
Well, we also, there's a big No Borders gathering coming up in London, so we're going to do an interview with some folks from the London No Borders group to talk about the gathering, what's going on, how people can get involved, and all kinds of other bits, why it's important, and especially in this time.
Yep, and we've got local and international news, upcoming events, and some tunes kicking about as well.
Great, so I think we're going to go to a tune now, so we're going to go to Red Alert by Kilna Boy.
Okay, this next one's for the BNP. We wish them a slow, painful.
If you want to join in, then you can.
We'll be right back. power into your lives? Is it media-friendly politics or a fascist waste of life? Say the times are changing, or are they just the same? The things your heroes fought for are coming round again.
Okay, great. So that was Red Alert by Kilner Boy. They were amazing, as always. So hopefully they'll be playing somewhere near soon. Great. And so now we're going to go to the global updates, the local updates. So starting off, according to Schnooze, crap arrest of the week for being in an enclosed space. Whilst trying to get into an empty building, three squatters were arrested under the 1824 Vagrancy Act. The cops claimed, not without reason, the squatters were found in an enclosed area. The squatters were held for 17 hours at the police station's own enclosed space. Despite admitting that they were indeed roguish vagabonds, as the act implies, the cops decided there was insufficient evidence to charge them and let them all go. Luckily, the Vagrancy Act has been amended slightly since its introduction. Otherwise, our three incorrigible rogues would have faced punishment by hard labor and whipping.
This is a report that was received anonymously from the Bite Back website on the 18th of January. SRCL are a vital supplier to Harlan and take away dead dogs and waste from the breeders for incineration. In the dead of night, we climbed over the fences at the head office in Leeds. Walls were spray-painted with slogans against Harlan and vivisection. Locks on the buildings were super glued shut and damage also done to the bike shed. Researchers are stuck in their training of years gone by and will not acknowledge that advanced methods are available to replace animal experiments. These are accurate and need to be used to cure diseases such as Parkinson's and cancer. Until they are, we will continue pushing forward science and bringing about the end of vivisection. For every blood-soaked penny you make from this contract, we will double it in costs. ALF.
A report on Bristol Indie Media from January 22nd says that a meeting of Bristol EDL didn't get off to a flying start, or any other start at all, as they found 30 militant anti-fascists waiting for them in the Drawbridge pub on St. Agnes's Parade last night. Around 10 visibly nervous EDL members turned up and didn't stay long when they realized they didn't have many friends in the pub. One was overheard on the phone saying, "It was about 20 of them, they're big, don't come down here." Kind of impersonation, eh? It was clear to all involved that for all their big talks and tough guy image, when faced with serious opposition, the EDL, like most fascist groups, backed down quicker than you can say, "Where have all the fascists gone?"
We're going to move on to some international news now. On Saturday 21st, Palestinian activists played football in a peaceful protest near an Israeli checkpoint. This was the first time the protest had been held in front of the tunnel checkpoint along the road that connects Hebron and Jerusalem. Road access has been prohibited to Palestinians. Around 90 people, a large part of them Palestinian women, showed up at the entrance of the tunnel and started playing footy, while others waved flags and chanted against the occupation. As the match kicked off, dozens of Israeli soldiers rushed in and began to push and beat the participants, but the demonstrators held their ground despite the soldiers' treatment. 3 days later, on Tuesday the 24th, Israeli forces raided the town of Beit Amar. Several families were forced out of their homes as soldiers inspected and tampered within, but no arrests were made. In other news, in Palestine, an elderly woman has gone on hunger strike in protest over settler attacks in the city of Hebron in the West Bank. Hana Abu Hikel began the strike after settlers burned the family car Saturday the 21st. Since Israeli settlers moved into the houses surrounding her home in 1984, the family have seen 8 cars scorched and another 6 smashed. In the past week, her home was also attacked with stones.
Bulgaria has recently banned hydraulic fracturing after nationwide protests across 12 cities in Bulgaria. Saturday the 12th saw thousands of people take to the streets along with solidarity demos organized by Bulgarian expatriates and other anti-fracking campaigners in several other European cities, including Paris, Copenhagen and London.
Marco, Sylvia and Billy are on hunger strike against the World Economic Forum in Bern, which is in Switzerland. The 3 green anarchist prisoners held in Swiss jails decided to join the week of mobilization against the World Economic Forum, which will be held in Switzerland during these days. Marco and Sylvia went on hunger strike for 10 days since the 20th to the 30th of January 2012. And of course, the World Economic Forum is, well, from what I've read, is largely going to be dealing with like nanotechnologies and what are those other ones?
So small, like, little bad things?
Yeah, there's like 3 ones I can't remember, which the World Economic Forum is sort of has a bit of a focus on, and people may or may not be aware that these people are in prison for destroying or attempting to smash up an IBM nanotechnology center.
Yeah, please.
So direct links there, and yeah, people should be definitely aware of the WEF that is happening. Switzerland must be about to crack open, hopefully.
In Syria, 30 people were killed in what has been called a very terrifying massacre. Activists in Syria are reporting what have been described as a terrifying massacre in the city of Homs. Witnesses say more than 30 people, including small children, were killed in an attack by the forces of President Bashar al-Assad. The reported killings come after the uprising against Assad has moved closer to the capital, Damascus. On Thursday of last week, rebel fighters clashed with government forces in the town of Douma, just north of the capital. Former Guatemalan dictator faces trial. In Guatemala, former military dictator Efraín Ríos Montt has been ordered to stand trial on accusations of genocide and other crimes during his 17-month rule. Ríos Montt seized power in 1982 in a military coup that has been accused of overseeing the murder of 17,000 political opponents and dissidents. On Thursday, a Guatemalan judge ruled there's sufficient evidence for Ríos Montt to face charges of, for a single massacre of indigenous peasants. Although anybody who's read anything about Guatemalan history knows that during the Civil War there was hundreds of thousands of indigenous peasants that were killed in a horrible genocide that happened there that mirrors what happened when the Americas were colonized. And sort of outside the courtroom as well on that day, protesters were demanding that Ríos Montt be tried and demanding justice and saying that everybody who was there was presente, which means they're remembered.
And speaking of colonization and indigenous people, so on the 26th of January, which is Angela Davis' birthday as well, I might add, is also Australia Day, and I'm doing air quotes there, which is... I'm going to let my accent really hang on this.
Get out!
Which is this horrendous national holiday, absolutely horrendous national holiday that happens every year, which is just lots of people waving flags and the Southern Cross, which is like the star formation on the Australian flag, is everywhere and people get it tattooed on them. It's just awful nationalism. And then there's the sort of opposition to that, which is Invasion Day. So there was a hilarious little incident that happened that I was just reading about this afternoon in Australia, where Julia Gillard, who's the acting Prime Minister? Is she actual Prime Minister? I don't know. She had to be rushed away from this restaurant that was like, you know, glass-walled, fancy, and all these people are out the front. Basically, well, what they claim was peacefully protesting, which I'm sure they were. But then when she left, she had to be like rescued from all these police, and the police start to like push everyone and destroying all this equipment and whatever, and they have these really excellent images which I would encourage people to have a look at, because it's just sort of so amusing. She lost her shoe, which seemed to be like the focus of the media reporting, that it was some sort of like Cinderella spin of this fucking idiot Prime Minister losing a shoe. And
she wasn't liberated of her high heels.
Yeah, that's right. Well, people focus more on the fact that she lost a shoe than like the indigenous plight of the people who were outside. But it was interesting reading some of the headlines around the world. I think it was in Italy, they focused, like, didn't even mention the whole shoe thing, but Australia, and mentioned the... I read one headline from an Italian newspaper that was about the, you know, the actual reasons for people being there. And in the Australian media, everyone's sort of focusing on, like, how terrified she was and how she lost her shoe and I had to, like, rescue her and all this sort of ridiculous shit.
But like her male bodyguards.
Yeah, yeah.
It's typical.
But she was quoted as saying that she's made of tough stuff or something like that and she wasn't fazed by it or some crap like that. But that's the Aussie battler as well. That's the Aussie battler sort of idea. But yeah, flag burning, which went on at the tent embassy in Canberra, and yeah, great stuff, as happens every year for Invasion Day. So
yeah, in London this past week there was some big demos of disability rights activists. They took some direct action against some of the cuts. They were supported by other folks as well, but they did quite some cool stuff in Oxford Street in London.
So from that action, one campaigner vividly described the effects of the state and corporate media propaganda campaign about the benefit claimants in an interview. "I'm here because I want to protest against the cruel cuts that are hitting the disabled horrendously in this country. That and the horrible, horrible propaganda that's been coming out from our government trying to villainise genuinely disabled people as being scroungers, as being parasites, and a 75% rise in hate crimes that's come along with that, that I experience daily. Just going out shopping, people come up to me and they ask me, do you really need to be in that wheelchair? Or are you, you know, just doing it for the benefits? Like, no, I don't know why anyone would want to say that in this day and age, even if the payments aren't accessible half of the time in the UK. There has been like a lot of, there has been a few reports out that there's a full article on Indie Media, but there has been a lot of reports that have been coming out about like hate crimes towards people with disabilities and whatnot in the UK, and there's a really excellent exhibition on called Resistance at the M Shed, which is about exactly that, and it's about sort of ties in like people's experiences, talks about World War II and how before World War II even kicked off, people with disabilities were being targeted and people weren't stepping up and really doing anything about it. And there's direct links between like propaganda that was going on at that time. The woman who's putting on the show, Liz Crowe, is amazing. Like, I went to see her talk as a part of seeing the film that she made. And just activist with like decades of history in the UK, like locking onto lots of buses and trains who didn't have disability access, and like really just constantly fighting, talking about remembering days when like public spaces didn't even have disability access. So even if you were in a disability like action network, you couldn't actually meet anywhere publicly because everywhere had stairs or it wasn't accessible even.
Outrageous.
But yeah, so she draws a lot of links between pre-World War II, how there would be like Nazi posters that would say, you know, it would be like a physician standing behind someone with a disability, and it would say like, you know, this person costs us this much money, you know, citizens, this is your money going into this person. So like, you know, as blatant as that. And then how that led into euthanasia, like a campaign for euthanasia, so that, you know, it's better that people with disabilities are put to death because we're like putting them out of their suffering. And then that led to just like outright gassing thousands and thousands of people with disabilities. And like it's yeah, her, the speech that she gave where she was talking about her art was excellent. And unfortunately you don't get that history from the show. I would still encourage everyone to see it though, because it's really, really interesting. But yeah, just really fascinating. Like, I certainly, when I was at school and learning about like World War II and Nazis and whatnot, you know, I never learned anything about the sort of pre-war attack on people with disabilities. Like, to the point where, you know, they were in towns and they were like what is now like an actual hospital, but they would just be rounded up on these buses. You know, the government would come around and you'd get a letter or whatever, and they would just take people from families and then they'd just round them up in this big black bus with all the windows like blacked out that people are like banging on inside, and it would drive through this town and then it would go up on this hill that you could see from the town. They had all these photos to see. And yeah, then a day later there'd all be all this like black smoke like billowing out of this area like into the town. So it's right there, and people like totally complicit in allowing that to happen. And then even, like, families might not even realise, so they would send letters to the family saying, oh, yeah, your son has died of pneumonia, you know, you can't come here because they've got whatever, some sort of disease that you might catch, and then it would just be, like, blatantly lying to families and...
It's horrible.
I'd never heard this side of the war at all.
Yeah.
But the exhibition is really good, and she was really excellent, and so definitely encourage going to see that.
It's very powerful by the sounds of it.
Okay, the next song we're going to go to is a song by the band Blinking Brown. It's called Water. They're a really excellent Aussie band. It's just for in solidarity with folks who are, like, stepping it up on Invasion Day. And it's just a perfect song. The lyrics are really excellent. It's just like, there's the solution. Shall we just listen to this song and then everything will be okay? Like, it's just blatantly obvious. But anyway, enjoy. It's a nice one.
I don't know why, but up here I can see the walls, but my man's
Welcome back to Radio Cabaret. So we've just been listening to Blue King Brown, their song Water, which was amazing, of course. And so now we're going to be speaking with Paul Williams from Bristol Rising Tide. Hey, Paul.
Hiya.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, pretty good.
Wicked. So thanks for taking the time to talk to us today. We've talked about fracturing, hydraulic fracturing before, or what's called fracturing on fracking on Radio Cabaret. We've talked about it before. And I guess we've also interviewed some folks, some women from the Blood Tribe, the Kainai Nation from Manitoba in Canada, about their opposition, their blockade of a fracking site there as well. Canada, Manitoba particularly, is notorious as climate criminals for the tar sands, and also now getting a reputation because of fracking. But just moving back locally, on December 1st in Hesketh Bank, sorry if I pronounced that wrong, in Lancashire, three people from Bristol Rising Tide scaled the Quadrilla Resources equipment with supplies, and they stopped the work there for over 13 hours. So can you tell us a bit more about what happened and what went down on the day?
Okay, well, it was pretty mad. We went up there like the night before and was like staying up really late, kind of doing last minute preparations and getting our climbing gear sorted and stuff, and then kind of, you know, mad kind of creeping around, crawling through muddy banks and stuff, getting stung by stinging nettles at like 5 a.m. And then like climbing over the fence and climbing up the rig, which we managed to do, kind of most of us that were trying to get up there managed to do it without getting caught. Yeah, and then just like clipped on with the harnesses and stuff and just kind of hunkered down with all the waterproofs and things that we'd gotten ready, and snacks and cups of tea. And we even had a special mug that we'd made that said frack off on it.
A commemorative mug?
Yeah, something like that. And yeah, did pose for photos with the workers and things, who were actually quite happy to fill it with tea. They were actually quite friendly.
Oh, that's good.
And then, yeah, stayed up there for like the whole day and into part of the night before sort of, you know, people feeling that they were cold and hungry and it was raining and they were quite ready to come down at that point, and had successfully stopped work for the day and caused quite a lot of damage in terms of the money for stopping it for that day.
Oh, really? That's good. Do you have any idea what kind of damage that was?
They did give us a number. I think it was, might have been 75 grand or 750 grand. I think it was 750.
Wow. Not a bad return for some cups of tea.
Yeah, and it's quite an interesting point at the moment with Quadrilla, because the company who were doing it, they're actually quite a small company, and they're just kind of starting up at the moment, and it's, you know, it's potentially going to become big, but at the moment it's quite small and quite vulnerable. So we're the second group that have done it. We're hoping that more groups are going to do it, because it's really at a pinch point now where if enough people do this sort of action, we could actually stop fracking from happening in the UK.
Yeah, and because I think the drilling rig is the only operation of its kind working in the country, as you mentioned, after a similar exploratory site in Blackpool was shut down in the spring because it induced two earthquakes in the area. And sort of hydraulic fracturing originated in the US, was actually invented by the notorious Halliburton Company, which is horrible. So can you tell me a bit, do you know a bit about the sort of opposition in the UK and around the world? Because I've heard in Glamorgan in Wales, the county council recently voted unanimously against an application to frack in the area. And there's been moratoriums in New York State, Quebec, the province of Quebec in Canada. France has banned it outright, and New Jersey, and so has New Jersey in the United States as well.
Yeah, there's been, they're sort of trying to get it all over the world, and resistance to it all over the world. Actually, locally, there's the Mendips as well. They're sort of planning for that, and there's a group now set up called Get the Frack Out of the Mendips, who've been having public meetings and stuff. Yeah, and similar happening in Kent and kind of different places across the country. But that's the nearest to us, I think. And I met someone recently who's involved in anti-fracking stuff in Australia. Yeah. So there's so actually just the day after we did our action, they had a kind of there was a big action, anti-fracking action in the US as well.
So it seems to be a real groundswell of opposition to this, because
many
people are quite concerned about the environmental impacts of fracking, whereas some people sort of are saying they're a bit more apologists for fracking, you could say. They're a bit like, well, those videos of people lighting their tap water on fire, they're probably faked or whatever. So can you give us like a bit of information or background on why people should be concerned? Like, what's, you know?
Yeah, well, like like you said there, there's the water contamination, which, like you say, has been, you've seen people lighting the water that comes out of their taps on fire. But I mean, that's maybe one of the more theatrical things. There's also worries of the groundwater being contaminated by that. So basically what happens is they pump loads of water with chemicals into the ground in order to fracture it. And then that's also been causing the earthquakes that you mentioned. And actually, some of the fracking sites are quite close to nuclear power stations, which could be a bit of a worry. But even without that, the earthquakes are a danger, and the impact on the water and the land and the potential for growing crops. I know that that's been an issue in the States as well. And it doesn't offer that many jobs. Like, there are only like half a dozen people working there when we were there. It's really... it's really not that good for employment, whereas, you know, renewable energy is actually much, much better for that.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, it's being kind of sold as a renewable energy, and so funding, you know, renewable energy funding that's being put aside for that is actually going towards fracking instead of more sustainable sources of energy.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's interesting. In Quebec, they did ban it and things, or they have a moratorium, I should say. And I think it's quite interesting there, because in the past there's been contamination of groundwater due to hog farms and sort of some of the processes, because of the waste they produce. They then go and lay that on the land, and that contaminates the local groundwater.
Yeah.
So they've had a lot of those experiences. So I think they're a bit wise to what happens when your groundwater gets contaminated and you're a rural community, like a proper rural community, not a posh rural community that drives Land Rovers, but a rural community where people grow hogs and vegetables and the food that everybody eats in the cities. And so I think they've had those experiences and really learned the lessons from it, so I think that probably contributes to it. So I think maybe it's time to just be reminded of that.
And there's quite a wide demographic of people being affected in the UK. There's quite a large amount of resistance locally in Blackpool, and with the groundwater contamination, it's not just the chemicals they put in, but like arsenic and things have been coming out from the rocks that this has been sort of releasing and putting into the water as well. So
it's quite dangerous.
Yeah, it is a worry. Yeah.
So before we wrap up, I was just wondering if you had anything else to add, and also if those who are involved are sort of facing charges, and what's an update on their situation, and what kind of support or solidarity is needed.
Okay. Well, we've run out of money, so we're putting on a benefit gig.
Okay.
Hopefully it's going to be in March. We're hoping to have a Kaylee or, you know, something quite upbeat like that. So keep an eye out for that Rising Tide benefit gig. And it'd be great if more people would be inspired to take action on this as well. Like I say, it's at quite a vulnerable stage, so it'd be pretty good to do that. And to find out more, there's the Frack Off website. Frack Off being based mostly in Brighton, but they've got a really good website actually. And then there's Rising Tide, based in Bristol. I mean, Rising Tide is a global group with a few groups in the UK, but we've got one here in Bristol. So that's risingtide.org.uk/Bristol, and, you know, get in touch with us if you want to be involved or come and hang out with us or anything.
Wicked. Well, thanks a lot for taking the time to talk to us today.
A pleasure, yeah.
Wicked. And now we're going to go to a song by the Night Gaunts called Spider Ridden Bats. Dun, dun, dun.
Come on, pick it up! Shoulders, tits, and spider ridden bats, gurgling and churning. My mind's in a struggle to contain my deepest thoughts. A disbelief in miracles, joy and ambition, signs of submission. Into love together, like waves down the crystal. So we run for the shore, escape the bay we fell before. Run for the shore, black and screaming on the floor. Run for the shore, till we can't run no more. Run for the shore. The golden rules, if I had a cable, I'd cut myself free to leave our past behind and separate entirely. Cause love can lead to tears, and tears lead to sorrow. Scramble colors mingle as blind little swallow. Open wounds and acid, and fifth and soul too. The roots that we grew have rotten through the roots. that we grew and brought it through. So we run for the shore, escape the pain we felt before. Run for the shore, black and screaming on the floor. Run for the shore, till we can't run no more. Run for the shore.
Okay, welcome back. That was Night Gaunts with Spider-Ridden Bats. So you might have recognised that, because that is the intro to our theme song that we've made for Radio Cavelli. Just a bit of a background. This band I found on a Riot Ska compilation that I got at the Vegan Cruelty Free Fair. So I got that from this cool guy who was also from New Zealand. Him and I talked about working in dairies and things like that. Not actual dairies, where you sell ice cream, not like a cow. But anyway... I discovered this band, I was like, that's a sweet little song. Then I emailed this cool band who's in New Zealand. I was like, your songs are rad, can we use it for our show? And they were like, yeah, here's our whole album. So they were so nice. And then we like had a little like mutual thing of like, oh yeah, you're really cool, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they're rad. So if you like them, check them out. Night Gaunts, they're cool. So we're going to have a bit of a chat now about the upcoming zine fair as well. Which is, what's the dates? 11th and 12th, I believe.
Just 12th of February, one 12th. Day.
Ah.
Yeah.
Cool. And can you give us a bit of a spiel about what's happening there?
So that's on Sunday the 12th of February here at Cavelli from 12 o'clock till 6 o'clock. So downstairs we're going to have stalls of zines. And so we've got people coming from all over the country for that. We've got 17 stalls at the moment. So we've got a few Bristol groups, like your more arty ones and your more political ones. And then we've got people coming from like London, Wales, Leeds, Sheffield. We've got this Siberian guy who's into making political documentaries and talking about political films and music from around the world. And then we've got like a few feminist and genderqueer focused things. Like we've got, I think it's Swansea or Cardiff Feminist Network, sorry, one or the other. And we've got, I've actually been quite surprised by how many people in the kind of range that we've got coming in, quite a few that I haven't heard of. One's looking at South Asian underground culture and all sorts of things. And then like upstairs, we're going to have workshops. And so again, the feminist angle is coming in quite strongly there. We've got one about sexual harassment zines and one about survivor zines. And so hopefully there'll be some quite hands-on kind of creative elements going on there as well. So that should be quite exciting. And then we've got the Cabelle Cafe Collective making loads of cakes and,
cool.
Yeah, and hopefully soup and pizza in the evening and stuff. And actually the day before, at 3 p.m, if you come along, you can join in the cake baking. So they're actually doing it as a vegan cake baking skill share. So if you want to learn to make vegan cakes, then that's the time to come along. So
oh, can I also, there's one other bit as well. I think there's going to be the Bristol Anarchist Black Cross that do political prisoner support and prisoner support in general. They're going to be hosting some letter writing as well to write to political prisoners and having a bunch of zines from people who are inside as well. So sort of breaking down that prison wall and making sure people's voices get out loud and clear.
And the fair is free.
It's free, yes. The donations are very welcome. But, you know, you can put your donation money towards cake.
Yes.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, yeah. And then you can stay afterwards for the normal Cabelle dinner in the evening.
And write some letters.
And write some letters.
Yeah. And are there any spaces left for stalls, or have you booked up?
We could squeeze some in. If people are keen, please get in touch.
Yeah.
For stalls or workshops, or actually generally we could do with people helping on the day, helping with cooking, things like that, and possibly with providing tables. So if you want to do a stall or workshop or anything, like, get in touch with bristolradicalzinefest@gmail.com, and also check out our WordPress, so bristolradicalzinefest.wordpress.com, and that's got like a list of all the stalls and workshops and flyers you can print off and stuff like that.
Cool, that sounds really awesome. I'm very excited, in fact.
Me too.
I'll be there.
Yeah, or be square, as they say. So now we're going to go to a track by Sunny D, who is a bike messenger, or aka bike courier, from Toronto in Canada. This song is called Al Sharpton.
Our friend was murdered on Monday by the former Ontario Attorney General. He drove on the wrong side of the street to hit him and then left him in the gutter to bleed to death like a dog.
We and them used to get along, cause X amount of bond around.
Use a plaintiff with his games did try, so you ain't entitled to try.
Apparently.
No need to hear your side.
Apparently.
Whether you dead or alive.
Apparently.
Growing up, though, at a PR firm, the defendant won't see trial.
Apparently.
Still jog the beach and smile.
Apparently.
Maintain the bling lifestyle.
Apparently.
Hey, kids, some advice for all of y'all. Get arrested when you're someone who gets two phone calls. Personalities galore, show examples. Go ahead, ask an owner rider, or what example. But they didn't leave my pal to die in the street, hiding in the Hyatt lobby, making alibis meet. They didn't kill somebody breaking laws that they helped write, but at least one of them knows what the pitfall looks like. What a joke. Hey, listen up clear, all about your justice system, how it works to tear. Time for trailer park trash, who love to drink beer, ain't the same as the one for the cats who own beer. Bunch of diplomats who drop half a million between drugs and rehab clinics fought in here. One for royalty and folks who rich and no fear, who can't even afford to chuck spears. See what I'm getting at? It's all about cash. There's enough of it, the laws you infract get bypassed. Wanna bring some? Put aside about 2 mil. That should cover for your legal fees and VR bill. Use a plaintiff with a tainted pass. You ain't entitled to try.
Apparently.
You don't need to hear your side.
Apparently.
Whether you dead or alive.
Apparently.
Growing up, go where the PR firm, the defendant won't see trial.
Apparently.
Still jog the beach and smile.
Apparently.
Maintain the bling lifestyle.
I know the murderer walks, cause dead bikes don't talk. Red Shepherd and the politician color a chalk. Killed the messenger, then fled to the hotel. Hyped up, mic'd up with some bull to sell. First call to the wife, hook up the alibi. Second call to PR for those opinions to buy. The man is an attorney, yeah, he got connections. So go on and call the cops so no one asks those questions. My suggestion, car's a weapon and that didn't stall. Hit the shepherd like a boxer that don't got any balls. Pick it up, dust it off, and then confront your attacker. But whoever thinks it escalates to disaster. After the dust dies down, crown attorney the clown. Puts the shepherd on trial while he's under the ground. Drop the politician's charges, sweep it under the rug. But we're all gonna have to answer to that ultimate judge.
Use a plaintiff with a tainted past. You ain't entitled to try.
Apparently.
Don't need to hear your side.
Apparently.
Whether you dead or alive.
Apparently.
Growing up, go where the PR firm, the defendant won't see trial.
Apparently.
Still jog the beach and smile.
Apparently.
Maintain the bling lifestyle.
If the shepherd had the money, would the truth be told? Would you believe what's in your heart or what's above the fold? Would justice stand a chance or fall dead on the floor? And would another person die because two wheels ain't four? Would you leave a human being like a dog to bleed? Would you steal a man's life who got 4 kids to feed? Would my people find protection from the boys in blue? And would you only care about it if it happened to you?
My view, let me get to the point and state a fact. Driver side window attack, I don't promote that. Not provoke, went there, fatal mistake. Did it for the fuck of it, give me a break. Does that make sense in your pristine reality? Mr. Never Done Wrong, Miss Ever Free. Okay, so you're sinless, your life's perfect, fine. Prove that, come turn my water in the wine. Of course you knew that request was rhetorical. So shut the fuck up, finish your editorial. There's a collision at Young and Glory, you might like. Tailor made for you to spin his car versus bike. Use a plaintiff with a tainted past. You ain't entitled to try.
Apparently.
Don't need to hear your side.
Apparently.
Whether you dead or alive.
Apparently.
Growing up, nowhere to be our firm. The defendant won't
Currently trapped.
Currently
still jog the beach and scrap.
Currently
maintain the bling lifestyle.
Okay, and we're back. We're going to go now to a pre-recorded interview I've done with some folks who are involved with the London No Borders Collective. So there's a gathering coming up in London on the 13th to the 18th, which you can check out online on their website. And I'm just having a chat to them about the gathering and what's happening for them.
Yeah, my name's Rich. I'm part of the London No Borders group. And, been involved in organising this conversion.
Cool. So can you tell me a bit about the No Borders Collective that you're involved in and why it got started?
Well, the group in London has been around since about 2005-2006. Basically, it got started as a number of people in London sort of got together in opposition to increased immigration controls and increased repression on migrants, building new detention centres, etc.
Yep.
And a lot came together during the 2005 G8 in Scotland. There was a demo outside the Bungavel detention centre. I think a lot of people, from London came together after that and really wanted to organise something locally. The main focus really is detention and deportation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that has been the main focus really since the start of, two of the main focuses since the start of the group.
So when we're talking about like free movement and detention centres and the abolition of immigration controls, etc., what are sort of presently like the main sorts of opposition within this country?
I mean, there's always opposition to migrants, unfortunately, obviously, traditionally from sort of right-wing groups. We would say generally that, the government and politicians in general and the media, there's so much real sort of propaganda against migrants, and migrants are coming here to steal your jobs and steal your benefits and steal your houses.
Steal your women.
Yeah, exactly. And this rhetoric is, you obviously hear it amongst, the Daily Mail and real right-wing groups and stuff, but actually it's just more generally accepted, I think. It's just become part of discourse and acceptance that migrants are bad, and okay, there's maybe a couple of, a very, very small group of migrants who are multi-millionaires who are fine because they're white as well, so they'll be
guilty
anyway. But apart from that, everyone else is seen as a problem essentially, and something to be controlled and not something to be embraced. And obviously, it's just the history of migration in the UK and generally in the world is just totally ignored.
Yeah,
and it's now created as a problem, whereas before it may have been seen as people looking for new opportunities and stuff.
Yeah.
Now it's really become an issue of security and tied in with everyone who's migrating into the UK is a criminal, basically. It's essentially a rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. So just on the sort of processing, like how we sort of process immigrants in the UK, can you just tell me a bit about like what you know about that process and like how many sort of immigrant prisons or detention centres that there are in the UK that are operating at the moment?
There's 11 large detention centres or migrant prisons as they really are, essentially. But they're all over the country, including 5 close to London. And then there's also some smaller detention centres. Prisons, including one which is now is near Gatwick Airport, it's called Cedars. A free departure accommodation centre.
Yeah, conveniently close to the airport. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So this was all part of the government's spin about not looking up not looking up children, but they still are, just under a different name.
Mm.
But detention is I mean, in 2010, there were 26,000 people in total detention in the UK.
Wow.
It's big numbers. And on average, it's £120 per person per day.
Jeez, really? That's amazing.
Yeah, so we're talking about a lot of money. And people in the detention centres are supposedly for people who are able to be deported. So that means they have to have the right sort of travel papers from the country they're going to be deported to.
Yep.
Which, I mean, we'd argue that no one is illegal anyway.
Exactly, yeah.
Calling someone illegal is disgusting. It's not, you know, people may commit illegal acts, but no one themselves can be illegal, should be illegal by definition.
Yeah, to a piece of land, like we're talking about a piece of dirt, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Are there any, like, proposals at the moment that are sort of, I don't know, seen as, like, a solution to this, like, immigration problem or, you know, whatever the government is sort of labelling it as? Because I know that their sort of idea that resurfaces every now and then about, like, immigrants having to learn English and all these sorts of ideas. Are there any other proposals at the moment that they're trying to pull out?
I mean, I guess, I mean, in terms of legal migrants, so-called, you know, people who apply for visas and stuff, that's certainly becoming more and more difficult. As you said, there's, you know, English tests and things like that, which are becoming increasingly hard to do and increasingly, you know, expensive and beyond the reaches of most people.
Just to finish up, can you tell me a bit about the conference and what people can expect from the workshops and what sort of actions you are proposed and what sort of numbers you're expecting, that sort of thing?
The conversion starts on Monday the 13th, and the first 3 days are workshops and seminars.
Mm-hmm.
The real focus is on resistance and looking at different ways in which resistance and solidarity has been effective.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to take this forward. So it's all about looking forward and developing plans for, you know, the months and years to come.
Yeah.
How we can. The last 3 days, the steps are the action days. So on the Thursday and Friday, there'll be some unannounced actions which will take place. So these will be discussed, you know, during the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the conversions, and
mm-hmm.
we hope that, you know, there'll be different affinity groups formed and different, you know, groups and individuals will take action wherever they can. I mean, there's a lot of different things that people can look at in terms of companies and agencies involved in detention and deportation, you know, across London. So, you know, the hope is really, as I said, with the conversions to actually talk about what's happening, but to take action. And then on the Saturday is the carnival, which will take place at St. Paul's, start from St. Paul's at midday.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, as a publicly announced, where we just want to bring together everyone to really, you know, really celebrate the resistance that there is against immigration controls. And really, you know, we want to be a strong movement, get on the streets and say, actually, no, we believe in an alternative where, you know, our government's to control our freedom of movement as where we can be or not can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want a really kind of good, positive atmosphere on that day and really kind of celebrate us being there and, you know, in solidarity and what we stand for.
Yeah, great. Cool, that sounds excellent. Wonderful. Cool. Well, so the conference is 13th to 18th. In London, and what's the No Borders website again?
It's london.noborders.org.uk/convergence2012.
Wonderful, cool. Well, that looks great. I've had a look on the website already, and it seems like you've been connecting with some really excellent groups. Yeah, going to be talking on behalf of their collectives and films and whatnot. I've just seen the program for the first 2 days, I think, but it looks really good. So I will be there. Wonderful. Thank you for talking to me. You better think.
My name is Humberto Perez Blanco, and I'm a lecturer in film studies at the University of the West of England, and one of the organizers of the Bristol Radical Film Festival.
Cool, great. Can you tell me about how the film festival got started and where the ideas for a radical film festival came from?
The idea of the festival started from a conversation between a couple of colleagues at the university, which for our own research we work on the area of especially political cinema, and we got the idea of coming up with a film festival, kind of showing the type of films that we are kind of very interested in, and it started from there. And the idea of the name of calling it radical was to try to differentiate it from other types of more mainstream political filmmaking.
And can you just tell me the explicit difference between mainstream radical films and what you might define as radical films that will be featured in this film festival?
Good question. I mean, we don't particularly like the term radical, but it seemed to us that it kind of highlights, in the first place, the fact that none of these films get commercial releases. In many cases, purposely, they don't want to be released commercially. And in the second case, also, it's because we think that this type of filmmaking, it really is types of films that the system cannot assimilate, that they are kind of too confrontational. And in that sense, they become way beyond what one will consider normally as political filmmaking and political activity that can be shown on commercial television or released on cinemas.
Yeah, so it's not like a Michael Moore, everyone can happily accept what he's saying and we can watch it on our TV. Yeah, I saw the ones that were on the release for the, not Gay Isn't Happy, but Queer Isn't Fuck You. And that, can you just tell me a bit more about the second film, the Marlon Riggs film?
That is exactly the type of filmmaking that kind of we thought about. The film was screened on public television in the States, but it created a floor for being a film financed with public money, which dealt with the experience of being black and gay in the late 80s in the States. Things that makes that film radical and relevant for us was, first of all, that it really cannot be assimilated within commercial mainstream channels. But secondly, is because at the same time, the way the film was produced, the way the film is made, takes it beyond, going back to the example of Michael Moore. He talks personally, Marlon Riggs, but he's not as a star. He's just one out of many other voices that we hear in the film. So it takes away from this idea of the filmmaker as a star and, you know, someone that we can identify with.
Cool. Yeah, well, the film was excellent. I was totally blown away by it. It was amazing. What was the name of it? I've forgotten.
Tongues Untied.
Tongues Untied. Yeah, cool. Yeah, it was amazing. Can you tell me about your personal picks coming up for the film festival, and maybe just even a bit more about how the film festival is going to be sort of programmed or scheduled, because I know the events are a bit like all over the place and at different venues and things like that.
We decided to purposely kind of distribute the film as wide as far possible within Bristol. That's why we try to kind of organize screenings in different parts of the city and in different venues, which makes it slightly difficult to kind of chase it around. But it was kind of our idea was to try to bring also kind of local communities into seeing some of these films. Each night of the week is organized around a particular theme, from political violence to women issues to questions about immigration. Each screening takes place in a different place around the city. And then the weekend it will be kind of the main focus of the festival and will be primarily concentrated at the Cube Cinema. are my personal picks for the festival, because of my personal interest is has to do with the two short films and the final film of the film, who comes from Latin America, and they are kind of basically dealing with political issues and social issues, but outside a UK context. And we wanted also to kind of bring similar experiences of radical intervention through films from outside the UK as a way to expand horizons and to contrast it with the kind of British experience of similar things.
Yeah,
and just keeping with the British kind of, you know, British versus non-British sort of theme, I noticed that there's a an evening dedicated to like the riots and films that have been made around like UK riots. But, you know, as you're probably aware, it's a very contentious issue, particularly in Bristol, where we've had many nights at the Cube through indie media where people will come in and will see a presentation or see films or something, and the arguments just sort of start exploding. And the last indie media event we had, there were some journalists there, and people just were laying into them, saying, you know, this is, you're in people's faces with cameras, and now people are being arrested, and, you know, these people are rioting for a reason, and you're there feeling like you're the victim. How do you feel like the event with the film festival is going to go with, obviously, you know what films are going to be shown, so how do you perceive the reception for that night?
For that night and for any other night, not necessarily all the films that we screen we do actually like, but one of the things that we want to generate, and this is kind of the intentions of radical filmmaking, is to generate debate. So we welcome that, you know, that experience that you were describing at the Cube, this is something that we will love if it happened again. What we want to do is not to set themes of ideas in stone. It's just film becomes a medium for people to explore their own ideas and to debate and discuss about them. These are very contentious issues, and there are many types of arguments, and our idea was not to kind of explore our own ideas and arguments about this, but to open a space through films for other people to explain themselves. So we will more than welcome debate, and we hope to some of the films are contentious enough to generate debate.
Yeah, I think they definitely will be. Did you have many with the last film after the for the films that focused on like queer histories and things? Did you have many people stay on afterwards to discuss the films?
Well, the first night was slightly different because we also have a party afterwards and there was music involved. I did personally have a couple of long conversations with some of the audience. I don't know how wide and long those conversations lasted with other members of the audience. But throughout the festival the thing will be different because we have set time in each session for debate in the auditorium after the screening. So it will be a much more kind of conventional type of debate.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. That sounds really excellent. Can you tell me about like the next event that's coming up, or, you know, events that are coming up sort of within the next fortnight that maybe people could put in their diaries, or, you know, we can link a blog to the website, but if you want to just plug upcoming events that are happening quite soon.
Thanks for the opportunity. First, on Monday we are doing a screening in collaboration with Indie Media at the Cube. We are screening Blood in the Mobile. And it's also an event to promote the Bristol Radical Film Festival. And that is this coming Monday at 8 o'clock. And then on Saturday the 18th, again at the pub Stack and Hounds in Old Market, we have another screening followed by another party in which we will be watching films from the early 70s dealing with the problems in Ireland. And it will be curated by one of our colleagues at the university, which is kind of an expert on the topic.
Great. Wonderful. I think that just about covers it. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add?
Nothing apart from thanking you for the opportunity to talk about the festival, and just to invite people to come along and, you know, enjoy the films for the films themselves, but also to encourage them to join and on the debates and the discussions, because that is the main purpose of the festival. So thank you very much.
Cheers. Thanks.
And so now we're back with the sort of upcoming events and things that are happening in your local area in Bristol. So get involved with your local long-standing anarchist social centre. In many ways, Cabele Social Centre goes from strength to strength with lots of quality events, services and meetings on the go, and more people are recognising the importance of such autonomous spaces. But not without struggle that we keep to continue to do the work of a self-managed social centre. The following collectives at Cabele are in need of new members, and all are welcome. So the events, the collectives that are looking for help are the Political Collective, the Political Events Collective, the Cabele Info Shop, the Maintenance Collective, and the Permaculture Quebec Collective. So check out the CabeleCoop.org, so that's CabeleCoop, all one word, .org, for more information, or stop in and chat with folks. If you want to keep your local anarchist social centre, Cabele, looking good and a reflection of our politics and the world we want to see, example, not shoddy and falling apart, then we have just the thing for you. It's Cabele's DIY Day. With tasks ranging from easy to epic, you'll find something to suit every level of skill and enthusiasm. Come and be amazed at how the lines between work and fun get confused and subverted as we put anarchist principles into practice, as well as self-organisation. And so work shy anarchists need to get a proper job? Ha! See you there. Bristol Stop Hinkley C Nuclear Power Station. They have weekly meetings at Cabele on Wednesdays at 7:30. Cabele is located at 14 Robinson Road in Easton, just in case you weren't aware. Bristol No Borders Cafe and Cinema Night will be showing Casablanca. Casablanca? What's that got to do with borders? Well, what with it being all about a political refugee trying to escape North Africa and being thwarted by corrupt officials, bureaucracy, and fascists. Also, we thought it'd be good to have a film that doesn't make everybody super depressed. Good idea. But they're just trying once, mind. So here's looking at you, kid, at 7 p.m. Thursday, February 2nd at Cabele. The Faslane Peace Camp are announcing 30 days of nonviolent direct action against the Faslane Naval Base to mark the 30th birthday of the Peace Camp. Over the last year, a small group have endeavoured to make the Peace Camp a healthy and happy place to facilitate direct action against Trident, the UK's very own submarine-based weapons of mass destruction arsenal. The month of actions will get started on Saturday, January 9th, 2012, so giving you lots of notice so everybody can be ready there with bells on.
Great. Lots of things to check out over the next month. We're going to end on a song by Aretha Franklin, which is called Think, and it's classic.
It is classic.
Cool. See you next time.
Thanks, guys. Oh, and we're also always looking for volunteers, so drop us a line at radiocabele.org. And we've just remembered one more event that will be super cool and that you all should be there as well as us.
It's with the Rising Tide, which just got a mention then. It's on the 20th of February. The time and place is still to be confirmed, but it's a coal info evening. So it looks really awesome because it is one of those things that it's like we use these resources, but then actually how do you connect your daily life with the resources and what's like the crossover there. So 20th of February, check the Rising Tide website for that. So yeah, we'll go to that song.